Instead of putting a cracker under a politician, why not some TNT?
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT. Today's News Talk. I'm your guest host today. Brian McLean is my name, also known as Hesher, in the Boiler Room, which will be live tonight around 8 p.m. So join us over there for Boiler Room tonight. We're going to call our senators on the show and let them know how we feel about potential red flag laws coming into effect here in the United States in the wake of the Uvalde and Buffalo shootings that happened so recently. We don't even have appropriate information on these two events, and we're already into the Senate. We've already moved a bill into the Senate. So please join us for that. And thank you for rejoining us for this third and final segment of today's Patrick Henningsen Show. I was joined by Ruckus, Mr. Adam Clark, in the second hour of the show. And we had an interesting talk about this legislation and what it might mean, and covered a couple other topics. So if you missed that, it'll be up on TNT Radio's website, which is, of course, tntradio.live after the show, shortly after the show, if you want to go back and check that out. So as we move into this next segment, this is going to sort of dovetail nicely into what we've been talking about tonight. We also talked about Biden saying there's going to be another pandemic. We noted John McAfee's death 1 year ago and the fact that his body is still being held and no autopsy report. Very, very interesting stuff in the news today, but let's go ahead and introduce our guest for this next segment. I'm going to be joined by Mr. Mark Anderson. He's the host of a show called Stop the Presses on Republic Broadcast Network, right here out of the one and only Texas. Mark Anderson, also known as the Truth Hound, welcome to the Patrick Henningsen Show. How are you today?
Great to be here, Hesh. I'm fine.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time to join us. I know you're busy with your own reporting and doing what you do over there for Stop the Presses, RBN, and various other media outlets that you collaborate with. I'm pleased to have you here with us today. And I think what I'd like to talk about with you, this is something I need a little bit more education on, and I think our listeners might benefit from it too. I want to discuss this whole World Health Organization takeover. Can you lay this out for us? Tell us a little bit about the fundamentals, a little bit about the who, what, when, where, and why. Get it? The who, what, when, where, why. All right, Mark, over to you. What is this thing we're dealing with?
That's a good one. It's the who, and then we'll talk about the what, where, when, why, and how.
Yes.
Anyway, who done it, right? Well, the World Health Organization, one question that always lingers is, does the tail wag the dog or the dog wag the tail? Is it like NATO, where the U.S. really kind of effectively controls it? Therefore, the tyranny would come from the U.S. and the Western alliance, and the WHO would be, excuse the expression, their bitch. Or is it the other way around, where you'd have a centralized WHO telling nation states what to do? In my informed opinion, it would be a little bit of both. And what's going on is there's a soft-pedaled kind of tiptoeing effect to empower the WHO. And this was recently brought out in American Free Press in an article I did, and I've reported it also at ukcolumn.org. And there's a group of world leaders whose presence was made known on the Parliament website, the British Parliament's website, House of Commons. And that world leaders, that group of world leaders is led by Bojo, aka Boris Johnson, the disheveled fifth Beatle, some call him, for his messed up hair. But he's the disheveled, always disheveled looking PM of Great Britain, of course. And so with people like him and Mark Rutte, the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, who's a frequent Bilderberg attendee, and even Volodymyr Zelensky, the leader, so-called, of Ukraine, he's also on this list of illustrious world leaders that are calling on the World Health Organization to calling for strengthening it, calling for giving it the guidance it needs, and empowering it, you might say, calling on it to empower itself in another way, to raise the specter of the WHO being much more involved and having more authority. They like to use the word strengthen a lot, Hesh. Strengthen the pandemic response of the WHO. Strengthen the WHO in terms of predicting when pandemics might happen. And these people are full of predictions that if and probably when another pandemic will happen. As you say, Joe Biden is talking about that. So you have this group of world leaders. There's about 20 of them. Some of them are from more obscure countries in Africa and South America. But you have your transatlantic community in there through some of the ones I just named. Macron is also in there, of France. So they're calling on more empowerment for the WHO. The WHO held a press conference June 1st where they talked about that very thing. And part of their empowerment is to go from 16% of their base budget to 50% of their base budget in terms of nation states contributing to the funding of the WHO. So they're seeking exactly a 34% increase in their base budget from allocations from the member states. So that alone is pretty telltale that they're trying to flex their muscle a little bit, trying to get that funding boost from the member nations. And with that, in accordance with this group of world leaders to take on a more strengthened role in predicting everything it would take to be involved in pandemic management, up to and including handling new ones or handling the response to existing as well as new pandemics. So based on that WHO press conference, June 1st, which by the way came out of the May 22 through May 28, 75th World Health Assembly of the World Health Organization, that's a regular affair there, the 74th, the 75th, the 76th, and so on. So based on that assembly, that press conference June 1st, what the group of world leaders announced through the Parliament website, you put it all together, and you see a strengthened WHO, but not anything blatant like, we're going to become a, heavily centralized, all-powerful WHO, and nation states will bend to our will. It's not like that. They're too smart for that. So they're taking this sort of multifaceted approach, and there is a petition mentioned on the House of Commons website that complains a little bit about this, and the petition says that Britain should not enter into any new agreements involving the WHO without a vote of the people, or at least the permission of Parliament. It's a little bit ambiguous in that area, but what that's referring to is the pandemic treaty, because at the center of this, if you want to look at everything I've talked about, Hesh, as spokes, the spokes feed into the hub. The hub is not really the WHO itself so much as it's a world pandemic treaty that nations want, that nations are being encouraged to accede to. So that's really the bottom line of it. Let's form a world pandemic treaty. Let's boost the WHO funding. Let's listen to these august, illustrious world leaders like Macron and Rutte and Ukraine's so-called leader and Bojo, and take their advice to strengthen the WHO, to enter into this treaty, and to be prepared for future pandemics, which they are absolutely certain, or all but certain, are going to happen. That's how the pieces fit together.
Well, that's very interesting and a little bit frightening there, Mark. Earlier in the show, I played a clip of President Biden himself talking about how he needs more money for the second pandemic. We need more money to support us through the second pandemic. We've got about 2.5 minutes until break. I noted that as something that fits into this. And I also noted that you mentioned Zelensky as one of the member nations there. And if I'm not mistaken, I think most of Zelensky's money right now is coming from the United States. So will some of that five plus billion we've sent over there be redirected to the WHO in this situation, I wonder?
Well, anyone with a brain would call any money going to Ukraine a money pit. No one making any kind of charitable donation, any kind of tax dollars going there. No one is going to know where that money's going. They're even saying that U.S. Gun owners in Florida should give up their firearms because Americans don't need to protect themselves, but they're going to send their guns to Ukraine.
Absolutely, so amazing.
Yeah, let's just send them guns and money, but let's not have any accountability. But you could very well be right. There would be, put it this way, there'd be nothing to stop them, and there'd be no way to monitor it if money is going to be shifted into this WHO scheme.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Much like the law rockets, the javelin rockets, the boxes of AK-47s, bullets, and cash that we're sending over there. No way to monitor any of that once it leaves the country here in the United States. Well, look, everybody, thank you for joining us here. We're going to take a quick station break, I believe. I'm here with Mr. Mark Anderson, the Truth Hound. He hosts a show called Stop the Presses on RBN, and we're going to continue this conversation when we come back from break. Like, what is this? Is the WHO taking over? Mark's making some really good points here and raising some good questions, and we'll come right back to that after the break. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. You're listening to the Patrick Henningsen Show live on TNT, today's news talk.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
We're going to be joined now by William Kay.
Pleasure to be here, Mark.
Fascinating, an important discussion. You heard me, I just referenced, I don't know if you were listening, but I was referencing the 19th century academic who was warning of the climatic excess in the 19th century. And I think that surprises a lot of people that people were warning of this kind of sort of doomsday, that long ago, 150, almost 200 years ago.
Well, I've long said to people that say, well, the environmentalism, didn't that come from the 60s? I say, yeah, it came from the 1860s. Not only yes. was Marsh saying that, that's when Ernst Haeckel invented the word ecology, which is a complete pseudoscience and always has been. It was premised from its very inception on the notion that human activity is disrupting nature and there's going to be this great natural rebellion. Once again, that dates to the 1860s.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
One kind thing, like giving us the clothes you don't wear anymore,
gets me a wheelchair and my independence back.
One kind thing, like raising money with a bake sale,
gives us comfort, food, and a warm smile after floods destroyed our home.
One kind thing, like challenging yourself to a sponsored cycle,
helps me sleep soundly, knowing my children have clean drinking water.
Choose your one kind thing and help change someone's world. Search British Red Cross today.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Government today.
They're not human. They ought to be destroyed.
It's like all the children from the Village of the Damned grew up and went into politics.
You can't stop us, you know.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio. We're live today, and it's been a really interesting show so far. We've had Ruckus join us. We've talked a lot about the gun control measures going through. We've talked a little bit about the pandemic industrial complex and the effects of vaccines, potentially. All this stuff, it all dovetails. It all comes together, and it's coming together right now with my current guest in this final segment here before the last break. But I'm with Mark Anderson, known as the Truth Hound, host of Stop the Presses, and we're talking about this concept of what often in the alternative independent media I'm seeing billed as like a WHO takeover or a WHO seizing the ability to do things like suspend the constitutional rights and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, it's a scary concept. It's one that harkens back to what we saw in 2020, 2021 with mask mandates, vaccine mandates, all these things, lockdowns, the whole kit and caboodle of disgustingness that was the COVID experience. Mark, welcome back to the program. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about how you described that, you know, the way you described it as basically spokes feeding into a hub, you know, and I consider that hub, as coined by our colleague Brian Berletic, as the pandemic industrial complex. So basically, uh-huh. we've got that hub there, this whole industrial complex of, you know, pharmaceuticals and medical and everything associated, and just the blatant tyranny of it all. It sounds to me like the way you're describing it, it's more like a compartmentalization to sort of obfuscate the hand in glove, multinational, multi-corporate, multi-pharmaceutical, beast that is the pandemic industrial complex. So that makes it a little bit more scary to me, because it when they compartmentalize things like that, they have a lot of room for plausible deniability in a venture like this.
Oh, absolutely. The situation involves another element in this kind of soft pedaling that I talked about to strengthen the WHO without being real blatant in terms of having it be the master of all who doesn't answer to nation states and nation states answer to it. I think that there's been kind of some wordplay and some propaganda on that too. I'll mention that. The Washington Post came out with another one of its debunking articles. You know, we're getting rained upon. It's like a hailstorm of fact checkers telling us what the facts are. Only they know the facts. If you don't know their facts, then you don't know anything. Well, another piece of that hail, a particularly large lump of it, hit me in the head one day when I was reading. And it was the Washington Post, WAPO for short, saying there's this conspiracy theory out there that the WHO is going to take over and they're going to tell nations what to do. They're going to dictate all the pandemic response to current and future pandemics. And woe is us, the WHO is our new master. And debunking it, making fun of it, saying it's not true. Well, no, that's not altogether true technically, you see. But what is true is what I'm talking about. And that's a degree of incrementalism and back channeling, but also relatively obvious procedures, one thing leading to another, that are calling upon strengthening the WHO. And Tedros, the head of the WHO, and many others are constantly using that word. For instance, I think you say his last name, Ghebreyesus. Tedros, the head of the director general of the WHO, said this at that June 1st press conference that I mentioned in the wake of the 75th World Health Assembly held May 22 through 28 in Geneva. He said this: the assembly, the World Health Assembly, also made important decisions on strengthening WHO's preparedness for and response to health emergencies, including making targeted amendments to the international health regulations. And then I went on to say, I'm reading from a AFP article I wrote, referring to an anticipated world pandemic treaty and a, quote, stronger global health architecture, end quote, Tedros Ghebreyesus continued by praising, quote, a new international accord on pandemic preparedness, that's the treaty, as well as a sharpened international health regulations body, which will, quote, be a critical piece of a stronger global architecture for health emergency preparedness and response, end quote. And this, the announcements, the press conferences, the press releases, the postings that you see, Hash, invariably have that kind of language, stronger, strengthening, stronger global architecture, like I just said. You can't get away from it. That language is everywhere. So you see, what the Washington Post was saying was sort of making a parody of people that are concerned about the WHO getting more power. Well, the WHO would get more power, but so would the nation states in the transatlantic alliance that control it, as well as other actors that play into the WHO. And therefore, the pharmaceutical companies would make even more insanely huge profits on all of this. And so it's a public-private partnership, and it involves a number of players. It's not simply some simplistic notion of the WHO becoming this overbearing overlord that would rule us all. That could happen eventually, but it's a more surreptitious approach, you see.
Right.
So, and there's an important point to add, and this, I forgot to say this in the first segment, but time was a little short at that time. Okay, so that group of world leaders led by Bojo that I mentioned, quote, announced, and this is from the British Commons website, House of Commons, Johnson announced, quote, an initiative for a new treaty on pandemic preparedness and response, that's the treaty. From there, quote, the initiative was taken to the WHO and will be negotiated, drafted, and debated by a newly established intergovernmental negotiation body. And I better plug this tablet.
Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting, Mark. An initiative for a new treaty. One has to wonder, why would we strengthen the WHO? Yeah, we got you. So anyways, the question is, why on earth would we want to strengthen the WHO after what we've seen from them so far?
Let me read that last part again. The initiative from the world leaders was taken to the WHO and will be negotiated, drafted, and debated by a newly established intergovernmental negotiation body. Now, nobody knows what this new intergovernmental negotiation body is or who's in it, but notice the chain of effort, the chain of command, if you will. It goes from the world leaders, this group that I mentioned led by Bojo, from them to the WHO, not the other way around, and then debated by an intergovernmental body. There's no mention of Parliament. There's no mention of Congress. So you see how this is shaping up. Now, maybe I overlooked it, but I don't think so. It appears that they're kind of quasi-privatizing the whole process.
Amazing. That is actually, I'm a little bit shocked to hear that, but not at the same time. That's my first run on that particular part of this rodeo. And again, that serves into what I was asking you about, you know, the fracturization, the compartmentalization. It almost makes it look like these large government agencies and bureaucracies and politicians are trying to paint it like, hey, look at this initiative we came up with. We're going to talk with our partners at the WHO and see what we can do. We'll get an international body going here. But Mark, am I wrong or am I being conspiratorial when I have to kind of read the tea leaves here and think to myself, well, the things that, you know, we know that they will probably instantiate are going to be based on what they instantiated during 2020 and 2021. Many of those things are patently illegal, you know, outside of the realms of sovereign nations, outside the realms of U.S. Constitution and other nations' constitutions. So am I being too conspiratorial if I start wondering, well, is this a giant grab at globalization, at letting, you know, treaties made by multinational agencies, shadowy ones that we aren't even aware of yet, dictate, you know, whether or not we still have our rights under a, you know, so-called emergency?
Well, you know, these people are interested or possessed by the will to power, as it's known, and power does what power does. And I don't think they even see it themselves as a power grab. I think they see this at this point in history as business as usual. But those of us that are more Puritan, if you will, about how governments are supposed to operate, know that under, for example, America's Republican form of government, such things need to be debated by the U.S. Congress and the parliaments of other nations, not delegated to a distant, largely unaccountable, extra-constitutional body like that intergovernmental body I mentioned. And I think that these people think that when they get together, and they're all executives, you know, they're presidents and prime ministers, they have executive power, but they're not legislators, they're not lawmakers, they're the people that are supposed to enforce existing laws primarily. And I think when they have these international confabs, they see themselves as sort of a quasi legislative body, and that they can make recommendations, and then the WHO kind of molds it or reviews it, and then they send it to this newly established intergovernmental negotiation body. And I don't think they really think anything of it, but they're so close to it, they can't see it. We can stand back and get some perspective, Hesh, and we can see that this is not how government's supposed to operate, even if this was something totally harmless. Because it's not just the content of what people do, it's the conduct of how they carry it out. And so you could say, let's sell brownies on the corner and raise money for the Girl Scouts. Well, you still have to do it right, right? You still have to follow certain procedures. And these people are completely tone deaf to that. They just believe they can do more or less anything they want to, because they've got this virtue signaling that they're going to save us from a pandemic. Well, if they were really interested in saving us from harm, they would also be much more honest about the yellow card data on vaccine injuries in the UK, and the VAERS data on vaccine injuries and apparent deaths in the US, and they would balance it all out. They'd say, well, the vaccines seem to work here, but it seemed to cause a lot of harm there. So they're not really interested in preventing harm, are they? They're interested in partnering with Big Pharma, which has now become mega gigantic pharma. Pfizer practically owns the media, and at least in the United States, in some way, shape, or form. And so, you know, you've got a situation where they're a bunch of loose cannons who think they're a bunch of humanitarians who are going to save us. But, you know, this also upholds the narrative of the germ theory of disease. You know, is all disease and all illness caused by pathogens and germs? Of course it isn't. Of course not. They don't want to talk about the companies that they own stock in, which are raping the environment in real environmental ways. You know, instead of the pseudo-environmentalism of climate change, there is real environmental concerns, such as the mining of cobalt and the enslavement of over 40,000 Congolese Central African children mining cobalt by hand so we can make more Tesla car batteries for their green revolution of these globalists. So there's myriad things. The glyphosate that's part of Roundup, that Monsanto product that is permeating our cereals and our breads and a lot of our produce. There's so many things in the air, soil, and water that are responsible for illness. It's not just viruses and bacteria, but the WHO, that's another part about this whole pantheon, is that it's all about this germ theory of disease. And that if we just fight these viruses like a bunch of valiant soldiers, we're all going to be well. Nothing could be further from the truth. There are so many things in processed food, in the standard American diet known as SAD. There's just such a myriad of things that are responsible for the general decline in lifespans and overall health, the prevalence of Alzheimer's and things like that, Hesh, and unexplained cancers in children. It's not just viruses. And some alternative health people I know even put pathogens almost at the bottom of the list. So that's another thing. It's a huge propaganda thing, sort of indirect marketing for Big Pharma, because all Big Pharma addresses is the germ theory of disease. Well, we need more vaccines. Why? Because these viruses are going to get us. And now they're saying there's a resurgence of polio in the UK. Is that true? I don't know. But you can see how this permeates our thought and permeates our worldview in so many ways.
Right, right. I don't even think they have any confirmed cases. They have, what they have is they've found traces of it in the sewer. So some weirdo in a hazmat suit is in the sewer taking samples of sludge and putting it in the PCR machine and running it against the computer model for polio, and boom, we've got a new little a new thing to be afraid of here. Of course, they're not going to talk about the efficacy of the PCR test or whatever test they might be using for this. Of course, they're not going to talk about not having any confirmed cases inside of people, or the fact that people may have or, you know, there may be some sort of false positives happening that could even be associated with the fact that so many people have, you know, taken on the experimental mRNA gene therapy into their bodies. You know what I mean? There's just so many factors that are not there. But of course, you know, they want us scared of every single whoop and cough and, you know, bubonic plague, anything that, that may ring a bell or haunt someone who has been, you know, traumatized and primed to undertake this kind of, you know, propaganda. And of course, those type of people, what you just said about germ theory, terrain theory, that would be anathema to them. It would, you know, they wouldn't even be able to understand where you're coming from. Yet I agree with you. It's such a huge, huge factor. But I guess we're just terrible thought criminals, Mark, who don't trust the science, right? Like that, you know, we're people like us are just dismissed outright by those that gobble up the fear porn and, you know, carry the water for the WHO and the mass media and you know, the big pharma.
Exactly. In fact, what people like us are really calling for is real science. And yes, I'll listen to science, if it is science, about pathogens, about the coronavirus, about this, that, and the other thing. But to leave the other factors out, contamination of our environment, through not just big pharma, but big food, big ag, family farms giving way to mechanized large farms, the use of glyphosate, you know, the Roundup that has glyphosate in it, and the way that permeates our grain-based foods and whatnot. And the U.S. is a very heavy carbohydrate diet country. So you have all sorts of kids and adults getting unexplained neurological disorders and things of that nature. And some would even go so far as to say that there's atmospheric modification going on. And they use the term chemtrails to describe patterns in the sky that are a little difficult to explain. And I know that's controversial in some areas, but it's, of course, worthy of our attention. Be that as it may, we're just asking for the big picture. We want everything on the table, not selective things that only benefit the power structure we've been describing, which of course includes big pharma. And now Pfizer has got its needles in the arms of kids as young as 6 months up to 4 years. It wasn't enough to have 5 years and older. Oh no, it wasn't enough to have roughly when you become an adult and quit being a minor and older. Pfizer's the only one that's been granted to go that low in terms of the age of its recipients of that jab. I believe Moderna probably can't get its shot legally authorized for anyone probably below the age of 12. I'd have to look that one up. I think it might even be older. So Pfizer is particularly weaponized here, if you will, and the FDA just granting it practically blanket authority to do whatever it wants. It's just unconscionable that 6 month-olds up to four now can get that jab after they did some sort of guinea pig trial on kids in that young age bracket at Stanford University, oh, about a year ago, give or take a little, and already it was approved. And we know nothing about those trials. And it's just incredible. And it's also interesting to mention that when you look at Pfizer and other companies, and you look at the other drugs they produce that don't have anything to do with COVID, and you look at their standard regular postings from the pharmaceutical company's website, such as Pfizer's website, and you read it, every drug that's announced, no matter what it's for, has the same basic description. It was approved by the FDA. This is what the drug is called. This is what the drug's supposed to do. Some of the marketing, a little bit of the marketing and maybe political notes, but, you know, stuff about the U.S. market and miscellaneous information, but invariably at the bottom of each of those standard postings are the side effects that Pfizer and other companies are required to report. And Pfizer has no qualm in reporting very vividly and very openly the potential side effects up to and including possible death about any other drug it produces except for its COVID vaccine, except for its mRNA. So, isn't it interesting how open they can be about their other drugs oh, this could cause death. It has caused death. But when it comes to COVID, when it comes to vaccines, and you get out of the realm of prescription drugs specifically, all of a sudden it's sacrosanct. Thou shalt not criticize. Thou shalt not say too much about it. So openness about prescription drugs, endless openness, but all of a sudden on vaccines, it becomes very opaque and very misleading.
Indeed, it really does. And that's happening while, you know, we're now at this point where we're far enough along in the large human experiment across the planet, where anecdotally, the data is starting to pile up. It's starting to pile up quite hard. We even had the I didn't even know this was going to be possible. I don't know how it's possible. I kind of think it's a bit of a, I don't want to say a red herring or anything. It's a bit of a distraction almost. They made a media piece about a Canadian who's going to be compensated for his injury after, I believe his was the AstraZeneca jab. But we're starting to see, you know, little things like that pop up, little tiny acknowledgments to kind of make the public think, hey, we'll make it right in the rare case that something goes wrong. All the while, they have to come up with new reasons for, new recommendations for how to treat babies. And if you don't do all these things, or if you do these certain things, then if you have a SIDS case, then, you know, those are the reasons why. There'll be no questions about, you know, if mom took the mRNA or whatever. But we'll continue this on the other side of a break. Mark, everybody, you're listening to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, and we'll be right back.
You're in luck. You don't like your weather or climate? Pass a law to change it.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Marano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Marano.
ClimateGate Professor Michael Mann, formerly of the United Nations, claims if you don't like the climate, you can just pass a law and change it.
We want to go. We want to prevent the problem from getting worse, and that means decarbonizing our economy rapidly. That means we need legislation, and there's still an opportunity to pass climate legislation this term in Congress.
And there you have it. Michael Mann says, just have your parliament, government, Congress, leaders change the weather by changing the laws. In the Middle Ages, people believed witches could change the weather. Have we really advanced? For the Marano Minute, this is Mark Marano on TNT Radio.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Remember when they told us that the last presidential election was the most secure election in history?
Well, they lied to you and the rest of the world. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio. Thank you for joining us. I'm guest hosting today. My name is Brian McLean, sitting in for Patrick Henningsen while he's out and about doing a bit of research and traveling. So it's great to be with everybody here on TNT Radio, all you fine listeners. I had Ruckus, Mr. Adam Clark, join me for the second hour of the show. And right now, as we work our way to the end of the show, I'm joined by the Truth Hound, Mr. Mark Anderson, and we're talking about this proposed global architecture, which would empower the WHO, the World Health Organization. And I will guarantee you that a part of that empowerment, a part of that, you know, those directives that they will be giving out when they deem something else as the next pandemic, will include vaccinations, potentially experimental vaccinations with no long-term results, things that shouldn't even be called vaccinations because they're actually mRNA gene therapy experimental drugs. So the big question that I want to know is, why should we strengthen the WHO and the pandemic industrial complex? And I'm going to pose that question to you, Mark, but let me read you something first here. This is out of Exposé, the Exposé podcast, I believe. And the headline here is World Health Organization, that's who we're talking about, WHO study concludes risk of suffering serious injury to COVID vaccination is 339% higher than risk of being hospitalized with COVID-19. And this comes out of a new study endorsed by the WHO and has found risks of mRNA COVID-19 jabs heavily outweigh the benefits, with scientists discovering a person is on average, as I said, 339% more likely to suffer serious adverse events such as cardiac arrest, stroke, or death due to the Pfizer COVID-19 injection than they are to be hospitalized with COVID-19. This is an interesting read, this one here. It's got included all the different types of adverse effects that a person can have, and it's more than I could possibly read. So I find this, you know, very pertinent, Mark. It's like, what's the deal here? You know, the excess risk of serious adverse events of, you know, special interest surpassed the risk of COVID-19 hospitalization relative to placebo group. So, you know, that's you're 187% more likely to suffer a serious adverse event than you are to be hospitalized with COVID-19 when it comes to some of these jabs. And they're talking specifically about Pfizer or Moderna. So why should we trust this agency when on one side of their mouth, they're telling us, hey, let us protect you and, you know, let us multinationally convince you to take these things, when in their own studies, they're saying that you're way better off with natural immunity, which was anathema to say for anyone, you know, just a few months back. And now they're saying it themselves, while at the same time, they're still pushing these drugs. They're pushing them into younger and younger kids, as you pointed out.
Well, I'm a little taken aback by that to a degree, Hesh. It's kind of amazing to hear that and where it came from. I mean, I'm glad that there's acknowledgement of it. My initial take on it is that while that's in the WHO's files, you're not going to hear that much, if at all, on any media that has enough reach to reach the people, enough people, and change or at least alter the worldview on vaccines. If that were made widely known in a, you know, efficient way, ABC News, NBC News, they don't tell the truth, but they have, of course, a lot of distribution power. The mass media cartel's power, of course, is not in what it says. It's in its distribution system, its ability to propagate its message and reach so many eyeballs and ears all at the same time. That's the power. That's the weaponization, if you will. So if that were widely known, the whole COVIDocracy would come crumbling down, I think. Although it's becoming more widely known thanks to efforts like ours, it's just a little more incremental. It takes a little more time. But we're getting better at it, and the mass media cartel, of course, is losing a lot of credibility every day. But I think it's that dichotomy between what they know deep down at the WHO and what the public is allowed to know on a worldwide basis. If those two things could meet in the same place, admissions like you just cited, and common knowledge among the public about such an admission, then I think we'd be in a very good place.
Right. We'd be talking science instead of the science, you know, branded, accept it. You're not smart enough. Just trust the experts, the science, you know, that branding has really worn thin. And, you know, I like you and many of our listeners, we like you, and you mentioned this earlier, we're happy to look at the science, but it's really hard to look at the science when you're taking people that speak outside of the corporate science and silencing them on social media, on podcasts, on YouTube, demonetizing them, firing them. I mean, for goodness sakes, we fired tons of nurses for not taking this shot. You know, maybe some of those nurses had something to say about why they wouldn't take that shot, right? I didn't see a single one of those people interviewed, not a single one about why they lost their job. It was very selective what they showed on that, which should have been the biggest story for the longest time. You know, what? We have health professionals being fired from their jobs for not taking this. Why is it that the entire mass media did not go out and ask any of those people why they didn't want to take it, you know?
Exactly. When people like that, like those nurses and doctors and people like Dr. Robert Malone and others who have managed to speak out, when they have something to say about the science, let's hear their view on the science, not just the Faucis of the world. That would seem to be such a no-brainer. And it's worth mentioning at this point that Crimes Against Humanity is still on tour, featuring that German lawyer, Reinhard Fulmich, I think that's how you say his name, Reinhard Fulmich, and Dr. Judy Mikovits has been involved, and a number of others who have become known in protesting the COVIDocracy. And if you go to crimesagainsthumanity.com or to that effect, you can look it up. That's still a touring conference that has hit about 7 or 8 cities so far, and more cities are being added to the tour. And that has not gotten near enough publicity, even in the alternative media, so I wanted to mention that now. So groups of people, like you're mentioning, Hesh, have gotten together, nurses, doctors, Robert Malone, who basically invented the mRNA technology, the basic technology, people that know a lot about the farcical PCR tests and on down the line, are on this ongoing tour, Crimes Against Humanity. So I would encourage listeners to check that out. And I'm going to be looking into it more, Hesh, by the way. And I'll have some stuff for your show and other outlets pretty soon on that. I just haven't had time quite to get to it, but I wanted to mention it now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you did. That's definitely something we all need to keep our eye on. Now, Mark, if we have time, we might shift into another topic, but I've just got one more thing I want to add to this to kind of cap it off. So I was thinking, you know, before we spoke earlier today, I was thinking, well, what could trigger one of these events, right? Like, how bad does it have to get for something to trigger one of these events? And I came up with some food for thought here. This was just published today. This is hot off the press, AP. As the World Health Organization convenes its emergency committee Thursday, that's today, to consider if the spiraling outbreak of monkeypox warrants being declared a global emergency. Some experts say WHO's decision to act only after the disease spilled into the West could entrench the grotesque inequities that arose between the rich and poor during the coronavirus pandemic. You can see where they're where they're going and what the angle is here. But to me, the fact that they're looking at something as benign and dubious as monkeypox as worthy of an emergency committee today to see if they want to declare a global emergency, this illustrates the very low bar that we might be dealing with if this happens, if we strengthen the WHO, as they say.
Exactly. This would be very illustrative of the political dangers of that. If they're going to react like that, I mean, that's almost like people are getting gum stuck on the bottom of their shoes, and now there's millions of people with gum stuck on the bottom of their shoes. What are we going to do? We have to have a gumshoe emergency meeting. I mean, I take monkeypox about as seriously as that. It sounds to me like an almost complete fabrication. Certainly, there are 3 trillion other things that are more important. And yeah, absolutely. It's strange that contrast, right? You mentioned a minute ago that the WHO quasi-privately acknowledges that the COVID jabs are worse than the disease itself. And you think, well, maybe there's somebody with a brain firing there. And then you read this and you go, oh, okay, so I got excited for nothing.
Yeah, another one step forward, 15 steps back situation here with the pandemic.
Right, right. And I'll mention, too, you mentioned shifting gears. I did some gun control measures research myself in the wake of Uvalde. And one of the things I found was that a bipartisan group of senators, 10 Republicans, 10 Democrats, that were instrumental in passing that bill yesterday in a preliminary procedural vote, which is an answer to the June 8th decision by the House to pass H.R. 7910, the Protect Our Kids Act. And that was a vote 223-204 in the House June 8th. While the Senate did their thing yesterday with that procedural vote, well, that bipartisan group of senators led by Senator Chris Murphy, a Democrat from Connecticut, who's behind them is an organization called Every Town for Gun Safety, or Every Town for short. Who founded Every Town? Michael Bloomberg, who criticizes private gun ownership while he walks around with an armed armada surrounding him in the form of armed bodyguards. At any rate, the president of Every Town, Bloomberg is the founder, is John Feinblatt. And John Feinblatt is prominently featured on the website of the Aspen Institute, which is funded by the Carnegie Corporation, the Rockefeller Brothers Funds, and the Gates and Ford Foundation. Big surprise. But what's interesting is the Centers for Disease Control, HESH, are becoming involved in the gun issue, calling it a public health thing. And granted, they might come up with some ideas that might work a little bit, like proper gun storage at the home or mental health issues, things like that, that are worth a look. You know, we're open-minded. We're fair here. But Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who heads up the CDC, recently met with Christopher Barsotti, an MD, founder of the program American Foundation for Firearm Injury Prevention in Medicine. And so they're reframing the gun issue, the Second Amendment issue, as a public health issue. And while they might make some factinos, some individual points that might make some sense, it appears that they're just using this as another form of leverage or another means of tiptoeing around the Second Amendment to create it or recreate it as a public health emergency, not just gun crimes in schools, as they're claiming, but a public health emergency. So they're even getting the CDC angling in on this. And I just wrote a report on this for American Free Press. There'll be more on this in the near future on your show and other shows that I can contribute. But Every Town, I don't know how much time we have, but Every Town, that organization founded by Bloomberg, is also saying that one of the only things that could help schools in the short term, HESH, the armed school marshal approach, where every school would have at least one fully armed, heavily trained school marshal at each entrance and at any outside gates or outside gateways that people might come in at, ingress and egress. Strangely, Every Town, while it calls for mental health, while it calls for not selling a gun unless you're 21 or older, more background checks and all this and all that, better gun storage at home, and yes, they support red flag laws, but they don't support the school marshals program. But what they do is they offer a misleading mantra here, and I'll wind it up kind of quickly here in the interest of time. But only 84 school districts out of 1,200 in Texas ever adopted the school marshal program because they didn't like it. It wasn't popular. But what Every Town is actually doing is being very misleading, in the sense they're saying, well, teachers don't want to be school marshals and teachers shouldn't be involved in trying to take down an active shooter. But the school marshal program was created by Jason Viaba, a state rep that I interviewed back in 2013 from Texas. And he called for retired police, retired military, sheriff's department, posse and sheriff's department reserve members, trusted members of the community, people that run gun ranges that are well-trusted and well-trained, they would be the school marshals, not primarily teachers, not primarily school staffers. So you see how Every Town and the media that repeats Every Town's mantra, how they mislead people and take the one idea that could work right now, school marshals, and lawfully work without infringing on anybody's Second Amendment rights. And if there is a would-be shooter, if that's really what's happening, then they go to a school, they try and get aggressive, they go home in a box that night. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. And this kind of common sense approach is being shoved aside in favor of all these politically correct ideas from Bloomberg's group. And so now you got the CDC involved trying to kind of medicalize the whole gun control debate. And so that's where some of that is heading.
Yeah, that's very disturbing. You know, I've noticed the trend where you go to the doctor now, and when they're giving you the chat down, the questions, they'll ask you about your gun ownership. So we can see where this is leading. All right, Mark, I want to thank you for joining us today. That's Mark Anderson, everybody, the Truth Hound, host of Stop the Presses. This is Brian McLean for Patrick Henningsen, filling in on today's News Talk. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.